This is Fel Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I don't have notes, so I don't know what episode this is. Seems like we're like in the 630-ish range somewhere. It's fine. I'll label it. It'll be great. It's getting beautifully warm. I looked at my phone just a little while ago, and it said it was 89 degrees, and I was just like, yes! Yes! Anyways, work is fine. Work is good. Got a lot of good stuff accomplished this week. Had some good meetings. Decided some good things. We're moving forward. Just had a meeting with my big boss before I left, and all is well. Things seem to be moving forward. It's good. It's good. Everybody seems to be happy at the moment. Yay! Good. Happy. That's fine. The writing is going fine. Right now I'm adding in all the corrections from the beta readers. So I think I'm somewhere around... I'm closing in on 300 pages, and so I've still got a... This weekend I'll get the rest of it in. And once I get it edited, then I start just the last read-through pass, hopefully just to do a little tweaking, although I've got one big edit I need to do on the back side of it where I need to kind of cut some things down, but I think I already know how I'm going to do that. I don't expect that. I think it was universally accepted that I put too much detail in the last few chapters. It kind of drug out a little bit, so we're going to chop that down, but I already know where we're going to do those skips. So that's all well. Costuming is going fine. It is King Kamehameha Day tomorrow. Or I was listening to somebody else and they pronounced it Kamehameha. They put the accent at different syllables and they changed the vowels. And supposedly they had gotten advice on that from a native Hawaiian speaker. So everybody I've ever heard pronounces it King Kamehameha, and it may be King Miha Miha. I don't know. Anyways, it'll be fine. I still have a non-trivial number of things to do to get ready, but... My breakfast buddy tomorrow morning bailed on me, so I'm probably not having breakfast tomorrow morning with a friend unless I come up with somebody I can bug. So that'll give me a little extra time, which I may need, frankly. So if I can get a few hours, a few extra minutes of sleep, that would be nice. All is well there. So all is well. It's always interesting with these costumes because, I mean, one way or another, I'm going to come up with something. It may not be the greatest thing in the world, but I'm going to come up with something, and it's always just about enjoying the journey, you know. So this has definitely been about enjoying the journey, and I was working on my hat last night, my helmet hat, and really had expected that it wouldn't take me too long at all. Expected to be finished last night, and I underestimated a little bit, but hey, it's fine. I think it's all gonna turn out fine. It'll be fine. So anyways, and then once I get the rest of the helmet done, which is a couple hours work, and then I just have little tweaky stuff to do. And then I have to actually put it all on for the first time and make sure I didn't slip up and do something silly, which I don't think I have. I've had individual pieces of it on, and that all seems to be fine. So, anyways, so that's good. As I said, I don't have any notes this time, and this is probably going to be short because I've got to get in, get it uploaded, and then get something to eat, and then get upstairs and start working on the costume. I should say at the outset, before I start speaking about this, that I'm not serious about what I'm about to say. By the same token, I think it has every right to be heard as much as any other critical theory has a right to be heard. So, because in every aspect of the critical theories that we've had rehearsed to us over the last few years, this type of critical theory, all of the rules apply. So anything, you can take any other critical theory and you can say this is inequity because of X, and this inequity is morally wrong, therefore we need to tear down the entire system and rebuild it because this inequity is wrong. You can take exactly the same standards that are applied in all of the other critical theories and move them right over into this critical theory, and it works exactly the same. So, I will tell you a little story. So I'm watching an interview with Kevin Sorbo. I think that's his name, Kevin Sorbo. Hercules. And he was talking about his background and how he got into acting, and he had kind of dinked with it a little bit. And he said he was at one point in his life dating a model, and she had a show she had to do in Paris, and she said, listen, why don't you just come with me to Paris? And she said, we'll just spend the summer in Paris, and she said, it'll be great. And he kind of said, oh, okay, you know, because apparently she made enough money that, you know, she could take care of him. So he said, all right. So he goes to Paris with his girlfriend. He's walking down a street in Paris while she's doing rehearsals and stuff, and there's a designer. He said the name, and the name was very familiar, and I can't remember who it is, but it was a famous designer. Walks down, and this designer bustles up to him and says, who are you? What's your name? And so he says, well, I'm just Kevin Sorbo. I'm here from the States. With a, you must walk for me. You must model for me. So plucked off the street, never having done modeling before, he gets plucked off the street, gets put into a fashion show, spends the next three years working as a model, raking in the dough. Now then, if we're going to talk about critical theory and about who are the oppressed and who are the oppressors, is there really any question that beautiful people are extremely privileged in life? I mean, they supposedly have all their insecurities and their own little troubles, but we can say the same thing about white people, that they have all their troubles and insecurities. But the fact is, beautiful people are privileged. There's no question about that. Symmetrical faces, body types. We have young ladies, whose only claim to fame is a body shape and a symmetrical face, and they can amass for themselves thousands and thousands and thousands of followers simply because they put on bikinis and stick out their butts to the camera. And that gains them more and more followers, and then all of a sudden, as one of them just flat said, if I can get 100,000 followers, I can make $10,000 a post. I also provide for you, really, what is Exhibit A? The Kardashians. I mean, the Kardashians. Really, is not their entire empire. Now, I understand they've made some, you know, savvy marketing choices and business choices and all that kind of stuff. But is not the basis, the core of their entire empire appearance. I got so tickled because when the youngest Kardashian, I can't even remember what her name is, you know, when she did whatever it was, her line of cosmetics or perfume or something or other, and it took off like crazy. I'm getting my mail. And now she's a billionaire, or ridiculously rich. And, you know, she was talking about the hard work and everything she's put into it and how that, and it's like, yeah, I'm sure that hard work had something to do with it, but it didn't certainly hurt that you're built like a supermodel. You are a supermodel, and that you have high visibility from your sister, and all of that is built on appearance. So I think, just from an obvious perspective, that no one can argue with the fact that beautiful people have a greater level of privilege in the world than less beautiful people. And it doesn't matter what your skin tone is. It doesn't matter really what your orientation is. It doesn't matter what your eye color is or your hair color or any of that stuff. It just has to do with beauty. And beautiful people have more privilege in the world. And if we're going to look at the people who have privilege and we're going to label them as oppressors, and for everyone else who doesn't have that privilege, we're going to label them as oppressed, the dividing line between beauty and less beautiful is every bit as valid as the dividing line between any other critical theory. So we should be able to start a critical beauty theory or a critical attractiveness theory or a critical asymmetrical face theory. We should be able to start one of those and speak with as much passion to be anti-beautyist. And if you aren't anti-beautyist, then really you're a beautyist and you think some people are more important than others simply because they're pretty. And we can speak with as much passion and we can speak with as much angst how we've gone through life, struggling through life. We have struggled in life. And the reason that we've struggled is because we were not born looking like Kevin Sorbo or like Kim Kardashian or like a supermodel or like any of the thousands of young ladies who are on Instagram putting on their bikinis and sticking their backsides out towards the camera. And the amazing thing about beauty is that it cuts completely across all socioeconomic, economic statuses. I mean, you can have a young woman who was born in the poorest little village, way out in the boonies. And if she is attractive enough and can manage to work her way over somewhere where she can be seen, she can make a very good life for herself. There's it's a fabulous podcast that Jordan Peterson does with a young woman who was in exile from North Korea. Just an astonishing story. There's no question this woman suffered greatly in her life. There is no question. It's a little warm in the car. I'm going to put down the windows. There is no question that she has endured. There is no question that she has applied herself. She actually had basically no education. And she got accepted into Columbia University somehow once she got to the States. And she crammed K through 12 education into 1 year by voraciously reading everything, learning as much as she could. So there's no question she's smart. She's absolutely brilliant. She's also very attractive. I mean, she's attractive enough that She got put on a television show and dubbed the Korean Paris Hilton. Maybe it was in South Korea. Because, you know, she had survived North Korea and they wanted her story and blah, 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 blah. Okay, so there's no question that her success is due to a lot of her work. But she survived, at least in part, because she was attractive. Because men rallied around her at key moments. And, you know, she has some very interesting stories about being exploited, but she at the same time recognizes these are complex relationships, and she had met these men at a time when she had to have extra help, and they provided help, they provided covering, they provided protection so that she could get to the next phase, so that she could get reunited with her mom, all those types of things. All of that was in part due to the fact of her physical attractiveness. I'm only saying that to say that beauty can take people from the farthest, backwardest, unconnected place and pave a way for them to go all the way through and even get elevated all the way up into high society and marry really, really well. One of my friends at Walmart years ago, her adopted sister, kind of foster sister that came in, apparently was a very attractive woman. And she ended up out in Atlantic City doing modeling, fetish modeling. And out of that, you know, married up and then got divorced and then married up and then got divorced and then married up. And all this way, she's carving her way up into more and more wealth. And she's doing it based on her looks. There aren't a ton of us that can do that. But beautiful people can. And whatever metric you want to apply, whether it's melatonin or whether it's sexual persuasion or whether it's you don't feel comfortable in the biological state of your body, I mean, if you want to claim those things and claim those things make you oppressed, for whatever metric you want to apply, you can apply that same metric to beauty. There's I don't have any notes, but like just before I started this podcast, I just went out to Google and I said, do beautiful people get paid more? You know, and this article pops up from the Insider in under personal finance. The article is called 11 Scientific Reasons Why Attractive People Are More Successful in Life. Because it's true. They are. And it works on a spectrum, but I mean, really, really physically attractive people can just be walking down the streets and some of them will give them a job that pays really well and all they have to do is walk back and forth. So these are the 11 points. Physically attractive workers are considered more able by employers. And there are actually surveys that show this stuff. Physically attractive workers are more confident, and higher confidence increases wages. Physically attractive workers have social skills that raise their wages when they interact with their employers. Okay, maybe they don't have better social skills. Maybe everyone just makes allowances for them. Attractive people are more likely to get elected to public office. I mean, honestly, you look at some of the people who are in the House of Representatives and what's come out of their mouth, and you look at them and you say, how did you get elected? Well, they got elected because they're pretty, okay? Women who wear makeup appear more competent and trustworthy. Attractive people get called back for job interviews more often. Attractive women have a better advantage when negotiating with men. Good-looking CEOs bring better stock returns for their companies. Attractive teachers can better teach students both in grade school and in college. Attractive women get better grades. Attractive people are more sought after as romantic partners. Okay, and yes, there really is a beauty pay gap. Physically attractive people earn 15% more than those considered less or unattractive. The beauty pay gap is larger for men than for women. Good-looking people are paid higher wages to do the same jobs as less attractive peers. Okay, so if we are going to frame all of this discrimination in a moral context, as other critical theories have done, and have said that morally you have to fight this because this is wrong and this is discrimination, if you're going to frame melanin in that context, why aren't we framing beauty in that context? And I know I've mentioned this before, but I mean, any standard you want to apply, getting tickets from police, you know, whether or not you're going to get thrown in jail when you get picked up. If you're a physically attractive woman, you have a much better chance of being let go. If you're a physically attractive woman, you have a much better chance of not getting that ticket. And it doesn't matter what your skin color is. So I say all that to say, there are inequities in life. And I at least have a quasi-symmetrical face. I don't consider myself to be handsome. I consider myself to have other strengths beyond that. But I am not physically unpleasant to look at. And frankly, that has allowed me to do some of what I do. I have applied myself. I have learned skills. I do have skills. I have done my best to make the most with what the good Lord gave me. But that doesn't mean that I don't recognize that if I was a foot shorter or I weighed 100 pounds more or, you know, my face was misshapen or I suffered some sort of skin condition, that it would be far more difficult for me to cold walk into a business and chat with them for 15 minutes and convince them that I'm the guy they want to hire. Because there are inequities. And those inequities cut in ways that are far more complex than just color of your skin or sexual preference or whether or not you feel comfortable in your own biological body. It's a whole lot more complicated than that. And we can spend a lot of time trying to figure out who the enemy is and why those people should be punished and why it's unfair and. But it's very myopic just to say that the only way these inequities occur is because of melanin. Because I would challenge anyone to show me why melanin is that much different from the divisions that are caused by symmetrical faces or clear skin or any other of a number of components, including your citizenship in specific countries. So it's just all very interesting. I think I'm going to start like a critical beauty theory or a critical attractiveness theory. We'll call it cat. And we'll go on a campaign. Maybe I could write a book about cat and I can share all my own personal experiences and maybe it can sell a gajillion copies and I can start an anti-beautyist or anti-attractiveness and, you know, try to convince people that if they aren't campaigning every day and looking for every problem they can find on where there are inequities because someone's not beautiful or are beautiful, that they should make it their life goal to tear down that system. And that if they don't do that, then obviously it shows that they support the system. And if they don't do that, then they are morally culpable. Morally culpable, I tell you, for promoting such an unfair and horrible system. So there you go. There's your assignment for this week. You need to go out and look at every way that you can find. You need to problematize every way that you can find where beautiful people actually have it better than the rest of us. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.